This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
We would bowl from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Bowling, food, bands, and an on-location broadcast. You won't want to miss it. So please tune in during the membership drive. Make a financial donation to KBOO and help keep KBOO on the air. Your donation financially supports KBOO, but it also makes you a voting member. And this is really the most valuable thing KBOO can offer you, a stake in our future. I am available for questions, ideas, and concerns. Please email me at navigator@kboo.org. Thanks.
Tune in to KBOO this Friday, March 22nd, from 9 a.m. to noon for a KBOO public affairs special, Saving Main Street from Wall Street. How did Washington abandon Main Street while rescuing Wall Street? How can we save Main Street? And how do we create an economy where everybody wins? Join us as we ask authors and scholars these questions and more on Saving Main Street from Wall Street, what history tells us about the bailout and what we do now. That's this Friday from 9 a.m. to noon, right here on KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Fly the blue, white, and green.
No, this is it.
There comes a time.
And good morning.
Good morning.
It is 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are tuned to KBOO, your very own community radio station. Because we're here for you, the community. We are the community. We are all together being community and, well, raising each other up, educating each other, empowering each other. And that's the work here at Community Radio. I'm Ani.
And I'm Lynn.
And we welcome Lynn back.
I'm back.
After weeks of personal sojourning.
We called it the carbon footprint tour. I drove from Florida down south back up to Portland, and it was a very interesting experience. I was a little afeard of going to the south, but I didn't get into a lot of political or religious discussions, and found pretty much everyone we met were delightful.
There you go.
There you go. It was an adventure and fun. And as my sweetie said, the least disastrous road trip ever.
There's so many places to go from there, but let's not.
Anyway,
right
let's
now.
Not. But I came home to, I was in New Orleans when WWOZ was raising funds, and now I'm back in Portland and we are also raising funds.
So membership drives follow you. That's what you're saying.
Apparently so.
Well, this morning on Positively Revolting, we are continuing our discussion on violence against women and stopping rape culture. This week, we're looking at the efforts to educate men about the need to stop rape and violence against women. And we have with us this morning a couple of guests to do just that. Good morning, Dr. Kurt Brungott from the Janus Campaign and Angela Marie McDougall from Battered Women Support Services.
Good morning.
Thank you both for joining us this morning. And let's sort of jump straight into it and give our listeners an idea about the groups that you work with. Let's start with you, Dr. Kurt Brungott. Talk to us about Janus Campaign and the young woman it was. It's honoring, and sure. and what you do in Kansas.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for having me. Janus Campaign is a organized effort by the family and friends of Jana Mackey, which was my stepdaughter. 4.5 years ago, she was murdered by an ex-boyfriend in Lawrence, Kansas. She had just finished her first year of law school. Jana had a degree in women's studies at the University of Kansas, and then was working on her law degree when she was killed. And she had worked as a young adult in the as a sexual assault advocate, and so we're trying to carry on her work here in Kansas.
And Angela McDougall, you're from Battered Women Support Services out of Vancouver, B.C. Can you describe the work of your group?
Yes, thank you. And thank you for this opportunity to talk about these important concerns for our communities. Battered Women Support Services has been doing the work to end violence against women since 1979. We provide direct services regionally within Metro Vancouver, though our awareness-raising and prevention work extends beyond, particularly within our online communities. And so we're way into the web, and our work is not only to provide support but to prevent. So we have a youth program. We have a program that where men are doing work to speak to other men, and our youth program is a mixed gender co-facilitation team that does facilitates training sessions within high schools here within Metro Vancouver. And we are so eager to have this conversation this morning.
You know, Angela, I like that the focus seems to be about starting to happen about men being responsible for the acts of violence that occur with women, instead of women's, if you just hadn't worn that short skirt, or if you were just not in the wrong place at the right time. And have you found that that's really starting to sort of take off?
It is, actually. And it has. I mean, this has been a journey to get to this point where we've had to really lay, I think, a good foundation, a strong feminist analysis of understanding the stratification of us socially, to understand the gender oppression and the ways in which femininity and masculinity that we're socialized into these very rigid gender roles. We had to really lay a really good foundation there in order for us to have to move to the next level, which is to involve men so that we can, we're coming from a strong understanding of the roots.
And coming from, that work of education, I want to also talk about Janus Campaign. As I understand that you do a lot of work on campus in where you're situated.
Yeah, absolutely. We're big believers in education prevention, and one of our focuses is on the college campus, and both with sexual assault and relationship violence. And one of my areas that I spend time is challenging men to get more involved in this issue. I always say that, to me, this is not a women's issue, it's a man's issue. And as we know, most victims of relationship violence are women, perpetrated by men. And so we believe that the real answer to this, both short-term and long-term, is engaging men and boys in this work. And we spend a lot of time, not only in Kansas, but around the country, talking about the role that men should play in this issue.
Excellent. I think at this moment, what I would like to do is invite a couple of other people on the air right now. KBOO is in our fundraising drive for the spring, and we are asking our listeners to support us so that we can continue this important work, carrying on this kind of discussion and bringing the voices to the fore that need to be heard at this time. Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ani and Lynn.
You have a few minutes to let our listeners know how important it is that they support this work.
Well, let's give the number to call in first. 877-552-66. Let me give it again slower. Toll free, 877-500-5266. You got 3 minutes to get on the phone with us because you can help Ani and Lynn take a chunk out of patriarchy.
Well, yeah, and you know, I mean, Ani and Lynn's program this morning is just one more example of the sort of programming that you hear at KBOO. You know, the KBOO has really, as always, stepped right up on this issue around violence against women and has been providing incredible programming now for months, particularly as the Republicans were doing everything they could to block legislation both nationally and locally. And that's the sort of information you're not getting elsewhere. So give us a call at 877-500-5266. If you're not a member, now's the time to listen, and not only just listen, but to join and become involved. Support the work that Ani, Lynn, and all the other great programmers do. Become a member.
And I'd like to give a special shout out to guys who get it, guys who understand that rape culture is about guys who don't talk out, who don't speak out against other guys who talk about conquering women or how they'd like to get it over on women or how it's funny when, you know, women are taken advantage of. I think you know what I'm talking about. You guys out there who are so essential in this new wave of feminism, you should call in. Why not? Why don't you call in now at 877-500-5266? I'd like to suggest the KBOO 4-gig audio flash drive, which has so much KBOO content, you'll be so happy to have it. It includes recorded talks by Ralph Nader, Helen Caldicott, David Barsamian, Winona LaDuc, Noam Chomsky, Derek Jensen, and Amy Goodman. It's all on there, and that's for $10 a month. Now, you can do that by calling 877-500-KBOO and spending just those 3 minutes on the phone with our phone answerers who are eager to talk with you right now. So the question is, who can do that? The people who understand that it needs to be done. That's you. And when should you do it? Right now, while we're ready for you. I'd like to thank Yulia for calling in and joining, and Rose, also from Northeast Portland.
Right. Both one a new member, one a renewing member. And again, if you're already a member of KBOO, good time now to renew. And maybe even bump it up a little bit of a notch. You know, we'd love to see folks coming in at like $10 a month. That's $120 a year. We do the electronic fund transfer. It makes it very easy for everybody. Provides us with the stable base of funding we need to keep doing what we've been doing. KBOO has provided 23,652,000 commercial-free minutes of radio. We want to keep doing that. So call number, 877-500-5266. Right. Yeah, I know. Next I'll be saying Poplar 12641, the first phone number I ever had as a kid. 877-500-5266.
You're not confusing the people, Dave.
That's right. 1-877-500-5266. That is the number to call. Thank you so much, Dave and Teresa. It is so important that you support this work. I know we have a pretty sizable goal to get to this morning, but one person at a time, that is the power of community. We add in together. Many hands make light work, all of that sort of thing. So please do call in with your support now. 503. Look at me. I'm doing it too.
877-500-5266.
Just listen to Lynn. Thank you very much, Kurt and Angela, for hanging with us there as we try to raise support so that we can keep this kind of essential programming on the air. I wanted to talk a little bit about the direct education efforts involved in trying to break through this denial. I think that in many ways, this country is maybe starting to wake up a little bit from the denial of the ubiquitous nature of violence against women and sexual assault, and to actually see it for what it is, which is the results. It's the effort. It's the work of keeping women disempowered. It's the work of men feeling, well, maybe I should just ask you this. What, Kurt, what causes, what in your work causes men to feel like they can batter a woman?
You know, in my work, and I've been heavily involved in this work, obviously, since Janice's death, and it's very clear to me, I work with abusers as well as young men, whether middle school, college. And there's a group of our society, a large group of men, who see women as property. And that's about as simple as it can be. And that, therefore, they have a lack of privilege over, and women are property. And that is often reinforced by the man code. And that, therefore, if I'm not an abuser, I allow my buddies to be because of that man code. And but it's strictly about property. They see women as property, and until we get to a place where they see women as equals, we're going to have this issue.
Angela, what do you have to say to that?
I agree. I agree that you know. Here's the thing: United States, just like Canada, the roots come from, colonization, come from, in large part, from Europe, and some very deep entrenched ideas about women as property. And in some ways, I know that, you fought England and you won, but a lot of those roots continue. In British law, British common law, it is, you know, women as property was standard. And a lot of that ideology carried over. So the very making of our nations as nations had very clear ideas of gender stratification, attitudinally, behaviorally. And we often don't look at the roots of, you know, of the creation of our, you know, of our nations to understand the complexity of our gender relations. But we can look there and see that that's where it started. You know, very much about this idea of women as less than men and the property of their fathers or their husbands. And so fast forward now to the 21st century, where we have media representations of, you know, that are, you know, women are objectified so much in media. And, it's really tough to challenge the images that we see. And we're just kind of in a wash of images of objectification of women in our bodies. And, you know, and we're all being shaped by this understanding, and, you know, women, we are internalizing that, men are internalizing that. And then, of course, we're talking about the man code and this whole thing about this rigid gender, you know, identities that, you know, that we're forced into. There's this amazing feminist, Sandra Butler. She comes out of the Bay Area. She wrote a beautiful book, one of the most groundbreaking books in the late 70s. Called The Conspiracy of Silence. And it was one of the very first books that talked about incest in families and, you know, fathers.
Right, I remember that well.
Mm-hmm. And she talks about, you know, back then, she talked about that we don't have gender, that we practice gender.
So, you know, if these feminist ideas were have been there and have now been reconceptualized, you know, through the work of Dax and Katz, who is anti-gender violence activist, who's done a lot of work and research on, you know, what we were talking about as far as the man code. And Byron Hurt, you know, who is an amazing African-American filmmaker who did some beautiful work with his brilliant film, Hip Hop Beyond Beats and Rhymes, where he analyzes hip-hop culture, puts it in the context of white supremacist patriarchy and, you know, and with the economies, and, you know, just really breaks it down in terms of, the, you know, how men internalize, you know, this, and then how it's reinforced, you know, by the dominant structures. And really, you know, we're talking about the economies, we're talking about Wall Street, and we're talking about, you know, the media, and that there is real economic reasons to keep women oppressed. You know, keep us feeling bad about ourselves so that we're shopping.
Right.
We're buying products. We're getting plastic surgery.
That doesn't help? No? Oh, you're right. Darn. Yes. Buying thousands and millions and gazillions of dollars in cosmetics to feel better. Yeah, I know. Feel if we could just feel better.
Then, yeah. Well, then, you know, and I'm laughing, but it's tragic.
I know. Well, you might as well.
I was going to say, the alternative is screaming, which doesn't go well on radio. And I often find myself in that choice, you know. So how do we actually get to men with this message? Angela, the work of BWSS, you have a program called Men Stopping Violence, I believe?
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
I'd love to, yeah. So this program, and I'm laughing again, but it's been, you know, it's been a journey. We were very deliberate in 2006 when we decided that we wanted to find ways, as a women's organization, as a feminist women's organization that's doing direct services, you know, for women, we wanted to find a way to involve men. So we started with focus groups, and we were asking men within our communities, what would you, you know, what would help to have you take more of a leadership role in, you know, addressing violence? And that was where we started. And then we moved forward, and we had we ended up showing Byron Hurt's film here in Vancouver. And because it was based on hip-hop, we invited Byron as well as Chuck D, who is the front man for Public Enemy. And we had conversations, you know, to four sold-out shows here in Vancouver with youth showings and then public showings where, you know, we got down and talked about, you know, all of this stuff, but really from an intersectionality understanding of it. We've always wanted to have an intersectionality perspective on this so that it's not only about gender that we're looking at, other forms of systems of oppression. So what we do now is that we train men, it's very small, we keep it small, and we provide training for men who then talk to other men about kind of the training, and then the communication is based in four understandings, kind of four ways in which men relate to the issue of gender-based violence. So men that use power and control in relationships. And we're very clear that we don't just focus on physical violence, which we know that most abusive relationships, only 25% are actually physical violence. The balance of them are a whole bunch of other things. And we have to change where we draw the line. You know, so we say power and control in relationships, you know, and we're talking about heterosexual relationships, well, with women. The other area of understanding is bystanders. To the extent to which, you know, men are aware of their friends who are doing power-based, you know, violence or, you know, gender-based violence, and they're silent, you know, and they're just sort of watching it and not commenting, or maybe they're passive. Or maybe they're participating, you know, through the social media by filming the incidents or, you know, kind of laughing it off. The other way is the good guys. Guys who, you know, maybe will help out a woman or a friend who maybe, you know, has been experiencing something with a guy, and they might go give him a talking to, you know, go give him a talking to, maybe help her move, maybe help loan her money. But they're not necessarily engaging beyond that, but they're being good guys. They're helping out. And then activists, my co-guest here, who is an activist, clearly, and who has made a commitment to taking this on, is going to, you know, engage other men. It's a life commitment, and, you know, isn't playing around. And so we want to find ways to move men through those four stages.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of that is men talking to other men.
And
that's a tough one, too, because that is not generally, Kurt, you can probably chime in on this one, that is not generally men's nature to sit down and have a good talk about things.
You know, it really is. And in our work, I talk oftentimes about, it is about men addressing some of the negative sides of the man code. And there are times that you have to stand up to your buddies. And there's a real balance there. You have to stand up to your buddies to say, hey, you know, that's not cool. We don't talk like that. But you don't want to be the one left out on the fishing trip. You know,
right.
So men understand that. When I talk to men about this, you know, you don't want to be the guy that's always left out and then get invited to the gatherings because you're the always one calling them out. And so there's a real balancing act, but it has to be played out. I agree with the other speaker that I see it in the work engaging men in both short-term and long-term. My short-term work, I think, is about it's about bystander intervention. It is about men standing up at situations where they know what's going on and they don't do anything about it. And that it talks, we encourage men to be brave and to separate themselves and what we call the new form of masculinity, that you prevent that and you be active. And we think in the short-term, we can make a big difference on college campuses and elsewhere, but especially on college campuses where I work, that men have to be recognized as interventions, bystander people who are not going to allow this to happen. The long term is much more about changing the man code for the culture, and that's about raising our sons. And I often talk at guy places. I go to car shows. I go to these kinds of events and talk about raising our sons and our grandsons. And the conversations we need to have with them, and how we need to model that behavior. Recently, I was talking to a group of 200 middle school boys, and I started talking about, well, I know what takes place in the locker room. And I remember hearing a young man in the audience say, how does that old man know this? <It's> so interesting. Yeah, you know, it's been a long time since I hung out in a locker room as a young athlete, but I know how it operates.
Right.
And so I believe it will take men redefining the man code, and it'll be men who make this difference. I think women can support the change in the man code and reinforce that, but I believe in my work that it's going to be men who redefine it, and it serve as role models for other young men, and that's raising sons, raising our nephews, raising our neighbors. Those are the things that are going to be powerful. One thing I know as a male is what other men think of me and what I say is extremely important. And we need to use that power in a way that reduces violence against women. And I always talk about, you know, if 85%, we know through research that 85% of the men are good men who never harm a woman. But the problem is that 85% allows the 15% to continue what it's doing.
Right.
When that 85% says enough is enough, we can really truly change this culture in a generation. But it's going to take, and I'm seeing it growing now. I'm seeing more men in just my short tenure in this work. I recently was in the Bay Area to Futures Without Violence, had an international conference of men who run programs that engage men around the world. And it's so inspiring to see that there's real momentum about men's programs, about engaging this 85% to stop the 15%. And that's so rewarding, what I'm seeing in that field.
I want to invite Dave and Teresa on again to let us know how we're doing with our membership support and to ask you to take this moment to support this conversation, to support the information that Positively Revolting brings to you each and every Friday morning at 8 o'clock, and to support the work of KBOO overall. It's your community radio station. You can actually make it so when you dial 1-877-500-5266.
Well, Ani, Lynn, thanks. We were both kind of absorbed in this conversation you're having, which is just not only fascinating, but so essential. And We're hoping that listeners are going to take this break now and dial 877-500-5266 and become members and support your radio program and all the other great public affairs programming that's taking place. And by the way, we want to say thanks to Jack, who renewed membership, Mount Hood, Parkdale area. Yay, Jack. And Catherine is a new member down in Salem. So we're reaching far afield, but we need to hear more from Portland, don't we?
Oh, yes, we do. You know, this is just really exciting and challenging work that you are doing, Ani and Lynn, and I'll put that number out again, 877-500-5266, because I want you, the listener, I want you to join in on it. I want you to join KBOO as we surf this new wave of feminism, this new wave of stopping the rape culture. I was thinking about that locker room attitude that I participated in when I was a teenager. And I thought about how different it is for me as a transgender person. I walk down the street, I use a different voice, and I move my hips differently, and I dress a certain way. And, you know, because I'm trying to pass as a female, I don't do it as much on the air for complex reasons. But I've noticed that when I pass women on the street, there's a smile that women all know. That women give each other, that women never gave me until I passed. And that's because they can't afford to give it to men. That's because there's a rape culture. And so, again, I shout out to men. If you know what we're talking about, if you are an ally, if you are one of those who is capable of talking down locker room talk, let's call it that, the idea of getting it over on women, the idea that sex is a contest with a winner and a loser, and that you get bragging rights when you win, if you're capable of talking to other men to stop that sort of thing, if you're an ally, why don't you join KBOO in this effort right now by calling 877-500-5266. You know how important it is. And think how exciting life could be, how much better life could be between the sexes in every way and every aspect, intimate and socially, if rape culture could be taken down, and you can be a part of it. 877-500-5266. I would like to suggest that you call now and pledge $10 a month, which will get you a KBOO 4-gig audio flash drive with recorded talks by Ralph Nader, Helen Caldicott, David Barsamian, Amy Goodman, Vandana Shiva, Jim Hightower. It's just an excellent and gigantic file that you will really enjoy on your computer.
It will also possibly get you the special KBOO t-shirt that has been designed. It's been touted as KBOO's funniest t-shirt ever. If you go online, you get to see a picture of it. $90 minimum donation. It's only going to be available during this drive. So now's the time. 877-500-5266. And let's not forget, while you're on there, you can sign up for the spring membership historic poster event. Get a chance to get a copy of a free poster. It's a beautiful poster. It's Young Arts, Young People's Art Festival. KBOO.fm. Do it now.
And, you know, I just want to, I guess, emphasize the importance of supporting Positively Revolting and supporting KBOO during our spring membership drive. I have gotten so much feedback since, you know, probably about mid-December, we started really looking at rape culture, about the suppression of women and women's power, about patriarchy and how to smash it. We've been revisiting this topic frequently for the last 3 months, because every time we do, we get emails, we get phone calls, I get stopped by people who have heard the shows, and people are telling me how powerful it has been for them and how important these conversations have been. Please, if that has been you, do give us a call at 877-500-5266 and let us know you support this, also with a little of your finances. We know that together we can keep this radio station going, but it does take every one of us that values the message, that hears this right now, to pick up the phone and just give us a little bit. Become a member of KBOO right now, or renew your membership to KBOO today, 877-500-5266.
You know, I have a question. It can be for both of you, but for me, it seems as though the Republican clown car of comments about women has sort of brought a lot of things to a head, and it's been in a very absurd way good as far as helping us recognize the absurd some absurd notions about what how to treat women and what violence against women really is, like there's more than one way to define rape or something. So do either of you have we can start with Angela first, a comment about that? Or
sure, yeah, thank you. Well, you know, we're in Canada, so we have a different kind of electoral thing
right.
going on here. But, you know, we, of course, with media, it's impossible not to get the U.S. coverage. And
yes, we're just too important.
Just following through social media, it's been impossible not to see the Republican. Well, it's sort of comical, almost. I mean, just how extreme the comments were. And so, mm-hmm. yes, I think that any time that you see such an extreme conservative, scary, analysis of these things. Most of us have traveled beyond that, you know, in the 21st century. So mm-hmm. it's been a gift. It's been a gift, I think, because it's really has allowed
way,
things
yes.
to come to a head.
Yeah, Kurt.
I would absolutely agree with that. Right now, as I sit in my car on this conversation, I'm actually in Kansas City, and the candidate for the Senate position here in Missouri was the person that talked about what really is rape and somebody can't get pregnant from
yes
assault. And so I'm very aware of that, and I can tell you that, and I agree with our guest from Canada that it has helped our cause. I think it has exposed some views that are shared by many in the extreme right wing of the Republican Party that has worked, I think, to our advantage. That many of us in the moderate area politically see this for what it is, and it's a call to action. That holy smokes, we got a long ways to go. We've made progress clearly, but we clearly know that there are folks out there that see it differently, and that we have a lot of work to do.
It seems especially well, there were the series of comments last year that were somewhere beyond unfortunate and towards completely outrageous. I don't know that I've spent so long screaming in a long time. And I'm a screamer. But, you know, between legitimate rape and Limbaugh's comments on birth control and all of these things, it just sort of really brought light to how important it still is to be feminist, how important it still is to advocate that women are actually people, because what I was hearing for years is, we're over that. You know, we're all here together now. You know, it's sort of like post-racial, post-feminist. Yeah, everyone's got opportunities, you know, just quiet up. And these comments really put such a sharp light to how absolutely far we have to go. And another way that is happening around us, unfolding daily this week, is with the decisions around the Steubenville rape case and the verdicts that just came out, and the rush by mainstream media to talk about these two young men who have raped a woman whose lives are now, well, their promising lives are now in turmoil because of this verdict. The CNN's response of a little 6-minute, I don't even have words this morning for this. There's a 6-minute piece on CNN that highlights the emotional impact to these young men this decision has had on their lives, and sort of has this feel behind it that folks should really feel sorry. These poor guys, they're such harshness has been laid out to them.
From the social media.
Right. and I just really think that this is that moment that we have to keep going with this message, that we have an opening that we don't often have to discuss this important work. And I'm wondering if I could get your responses to that. Let's start with Angela.
Well, Steubenville offers us tremendous lessons in so many ways, and both in terms of the everything around the formation of masculinity for young men, and the relationship to, you know, women and, you know, young women. And, you know, there's been a big discussion about consent, which is really an important conversation to have, and it says we do need to be clear about that. For me, the bigger question was not so much, it was about consent, but it was also about entitlement. Because I think, you know, what we've learned is that, you know, to a certain extent, there was an understanding of consent, but there was an overarching feeling of entitlement in terms of what these young men could do to mm-hmm. this young woman. And the other part that, you know, we've talked about the substance use and the, you know, the role of alcohol there, and what we haven't discussed at all, it's been rendered invisible, is the fact that she thought that she was drugged. You know, that we haven't heard about right. that aspect. And people even heard that she hadn't, you know, that she wasn't, she was seen not to have drunk very much. You know, so there's so many lessons here, and it's been vital. One other final piece that's just incredibly vital has been that the only thing unusual about Steubenville, because we have, you know, any weekend, at any, you know, anywhere in Canada and the United States, these events are going on
yes.
somewhere. We've had lots of them here regionally. It happens all the time. Lots of it doesn't make the news. And it's usually the social media that, you know, ends up being the story, in a way, because that's what brings it to light. Is the most unusual thing about this is the conviction. You know,
yes.
and I think that in large part that, you know, the conviction is you know, we about 2% of all reported sexual violence, which is the most underreported violent crime that we have, and it's less than 10%, you know, that gets reported. 2% actually reaches that is actually where there's a conviction of any that actually make it to court. So it's, you know, it's minuscule. So, and I think in part, you know, because of this attitude about the offender, you know, the perpetrator, and not wanting to ruin their life, that there's a, you know, and that, and also this whole thing about women, and that we're, you know, it's not, you know, at some point we're responsible because of our, you know, our behavior makes us somehow responsible. But this thing about not wanting to do harm to the perpetrator.
I want to remind people you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO FM online anywhere. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn. We have guests this morning from Janice Campaign and Battered Women Support Services. I want to invite you to join us on Facebook. We have our Positively Revolting fan page. We can continue these discussions throughout the week. Go ahead and like us on Facebook. Again, you can find us where we are, Positively Revolting. You can also email us at any time, and that's at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And thanks to our intern, Sarah Sneath, we are now tweeting as well, and you can follow us at Positive Revolt on Twitter. I wanted to look a little bit more at that sense of entitlement that seems to really be playing a part of rape and of violence against women. And it seems to me that we hear the entitlement supported in statements like "she's asking for it." There's been some horrendous responses to the Steubenville case and to other cases of prominence lately, where I've seen in social media people commenting or tweeting that if a girl goes to the party and gets wasted, she's begging for it. She wants to be raped. That's how she is signaling she wants to be raped. That's the only reason a girl would go to a party and get drunk, apparently, according to these comments and tweets that I'm seeing. And, you know, it seems to me that this is a way that we bolster that entitlement. This is the way that our culture actually, far from, you know, hypothetically thinking that rape is you know, a horrible crime where we all come together to fight it, that in fact we look for ways to excuse this behavior. We talk about it being an incessant biological drive for men. We talk about how women are actively participating in it because of the way we act, dress, or intoxicate ourselves. Can we unwrap that a little bit more and look at those messages that really bolster the entitlement problem?
Let me talk about that, if you don't mind.
Please.
because the comments you bring up really relate to, I don't know if you know a person by the name of Ann Munch. Ann Munch works in this area of prevention of sexual assault with U.S. military. She's out of Denver, Colorado, and I've learned so much from her about this very issue. And let me tell you what Ann says to us. She says, you know, that oftentimes both men and women, especially women, will blame the victim. And the reason why they do that is it provides some security for themselves. Yes. Is that if the victim did something wrong, then clearly they won't make that same mistake. And therefore, it's comforting to blame the victim that because of where she was at, what she was wearing, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Then it makes all women feel more secure that if I don't do those certain things, I will be safe. Mm-hmm. It's when we don't blame the victim that all women feel vulnerable, and men as well. But Anne just really speaks powerful about this issue, and that it's an issue of personal security for many women. And I would like our other guests to comment on that.
Angela, over to you.
Well, you know, that is, you've just brought an important nuance to the conversation that, that is a big part of it, for sure. And, you know, what we need to continue doing most definitely is raising the awareness that, you know, continuing to raise the awareness and provide more and more spaces where women can really talk about our lives and the amount of sexual harassment that we deal with in the street, the things that we do every single day in order to be safe, that we don't even, that's just like breathing. Like, it's just, you know, every day what we, you know, we do in order to, you know, navigate, you know, our environment in order to be safe. And then the ways in which we manage and cope with, you know, a rape culture, which is, you know, as Kurt said, part of it is, you know, blaming other women, you know, because we, you know, we're trying to find ways to cope with it. And the blaming other women is reinforced by, you know, the broader society. So, you know, so there's these very complex social things, and we have to make visible that which is rendered invisible. And that's the stuff that Kurt's doing, you know, and that other men, you know, that have decided to be activists for all those very personal reasons that they've decided to be activists, because it's usually something very personal and painful and tragic that, you know, brings men to this conversation. You know, and I just really honor you, Kurt, and, you know, and honor the ways in which you're honoring the life of Jenna. And, you know, and it was, it matters.
Thank you, Angela. I would like to share a few other things that I think are encouraging. You know, we can sure put a frown on our face and talk about this all day, but there are some encouraging signs here. I think Steubenville has brought, in many other cases, a case in India and other cases of violence against women. You know, I would probably argue 10 years ago it might not have made the news like it is today and shine light on it, and I think that's a positive thing. I think the White House, the administration that we have right now in D.C. is a tremendous ally, especially Joe Biden, as it relates to sexual assault and some of the work I've done with the feds is that, well, they're trying to do everything possible on college campuses and elsewhere under their power through the U.S. Department of Justice, U.S. Department of Education, to really make this a powerful issue that has not been done by any previous White House in modern history. And I think those are encouraging signs. There's now a new alliance called Men Engaged. It's an international alliance of men engaging men in this work that has just met in New York right at the same time the Commission on the Status of Women was taking place in the UN. So there's a growing movement, and that's a sign for all of us that there's hope. But we need to push hard, and this is there could be a tipping point here that on this issue, and we may be getting close. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but
Well, a little optimism never hurt anyone.
And I'd love to believe that. I really would, Kurt.
And well, another thing that I find, there's the how social media, I mean, in Steubenville, they were saying the case that social media won, how what kind of crime goes when teen sexual assault meets social media and goes glaringly public. Now, I remember during the Rodney King case, Whoopi Goldberg said, minicams, don't leave home without them. But it seems like there's more documentation and publicity around this sort of thing that is not necessarily coming from corporate media, but just from the people in social media. I know that, Angela, you've really been working with social media a lot. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, and I've talked a bit today about media, and we have to, you know, we're just a little women's organization here in Vancouver, you know, and we're up against so just this massive, media machine. We have to use media and social media in order to move our message forward. And we have to use new media in order to move our message. And, you know, in Steubenville, one of the other lessons is that it's not only enough for the young man to, impose their will on this young woman, but it's about telling the story about the imposing the will on the young woman. That is such a critical part of this, is that they have to share it. They have to share it with their buddies. And I remember, when I was growing up in high school, we heard, those kinds of circumstances happened, a lot with same thing, and I'm pushing 50. So that I'm talking about, it's been a while. And so the same thing. And part of the experience was telling the story about what they, what they would do to the girl. And so now with social media, it's just it's communication. So it's just a continuation, just another form of sharing the story. But of course, as we know, the internet is permanent.
Right.
It's a permanent thing. So we have to understand that social media is a factor here, and that telling the story of the violation is a part of the experience for those that do that harm.
Yeah, Angela, I might add to that. In today's world, all of us carry a cell phone with a camera in it, and what's happening is that means every person we see, likely, not every, but almost every person we see has a camera with them. And this hidden social disease is no longer becoming hidden.
Right.
Because of that we're all seeing that. And I think that's a positive thing, that to recognize and to solve a social disease, you first have to recognize it for what it is. And we're taking away the hidden word in front of that, of this issue. And I think that's a positive thing based on technology.
Well, and I think that is where we're going to have to end our discussion for this morning. I want to thank both of you so much, Dr. Kurt Brungart from Janus Campaign and Angela Marie McDougall, Executive Director of Battered Women Support Services. Thank you both for making time for Positively Revolting this morning, and good luck with your very important work.
Thank you, Ani. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Kurt. Wonderful morning.
Well, thank you for having us on and bringing light to this issue and your very, very important work. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And of course, if people want more information on Janus Campaign or on Battered Women Support Services and the amazing side projects they are involved with, like Men Stopping Violence and Youth Stopping Violence, you can get information on our Facebook page. That's right, facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can find out more information about both of our guests and their organizations there. And right now we want to welcome back Dave and Teresa.
Hi.
And Teresa, welcome.
Hey.
How are we doing?
We've got calls coming in. I don't have a total right now. We'll get it in just a moment. But it is exciting to have people joining. And I can feel the excitement coming out from this new effort, because there's so much potential to actually getting men to join in and stopping rape culture. And I'm really proud to be a part of it. I'm really pleased to be listening to y'all. And I'm lucky I get to actually watch y'all do your thing. And, Ani, I watched you stay up all night working on what you're going to say and the information that you want to provide. You can join Ani and Lynn, and you can join this effort by calling 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. We have just a few minutes left. We need to get another 10 members in right now. I'd like to suggest that you commit to spending $10 a month to keep this so important community radio on the air.
That's right. And we'll also throw in at $10 a month, we'll throw in a limited edition KBOO t-shirt touted as the funniest t-shirt ever. And it is quite nice and pretty funny. So call 5-8. I cannot get rid of that area code.
You can do it, Dave.
877-500-5266. And tell one of our volunteers here waiting to pick up the phone that you want to become a member. It's time for you to not just be a listener, become a stakeholder in KBOO. Support the work that Ani and Lynn are doing and all the other great folks here who are putting on programming. You know, coming up at 9, we're having a 3-hour special, Saving Main Street from Wall Street. It's going to feature interviews with Neil Barofsky, Sheila Bair, Leo Panitch, Magritte Kennedy, and our local Portland economist, Joel Magnuson. It's, you know, the sort of special programming, again, you just don't hear anywhere else but here at the Boo. So call us at 877-500-5266. Become a member.
You can also donate online, kboo.fm. Click the tip jar and, you know, mention that you're supporting Positively Revolting.
Just select it. It's easy.
You enjoy the sense of outrage that you get with us every Friday morning as we bring you those undercurrents that we need to talk about so that we can start living in that world based on love, truth, and beauty, so we can decry the crimes that go on in this world against humanity. It is important that we act together. Concerted action gets the goods. So give us a call at 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. $10 a month, $5 a month. I suggest 1 hour's wage every month. Work your community hour for KBOO and send in that hour's wage to support your entire community so that we continue to have access to the airwaves to have conversations just like this. That's 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm. We just have a minute and a half left.
This work that we are doing is so important. And when we have Noam Chomsky and Michael Perini and other speakers come into town, they say that they can tell that there's a community radio station operating. You want to be part of that, I know. So please call us now, 877-500-5266. Just got a little bit of time left, but it's enough time for you to spend, say, 3 minutes on the phone and pledge. Well, I pledge $20 a month because that's pretty close to an hour's wage. And I'm really glad that I do. I'm proud that I do. And, of course, I'm a KBOO member. I have my member discounts. I'm a voting member. I'm part of KBOO.
$20 a month, $10 a month, $5 a month. The important part is you join now. Become a stakeholder in this incredible resource we have here, community radio, where you're going to be hearing the programming like you heard just now with Positively Revolting Talk Radio with Lynn and Ani, taking on big issues like patriarchy, the 3-hour special program we have coming up, Saving Main Street from Wall Street. All of that is possible because we have folks out there who are supporting KBOO. We want you to be part of that community. So dial now, 877-500-5266. We've only got about 20 seconds left. We want to make this goal. Do it now. Get in under the wire. $90 minimum pledge. We'll give you the funniest t-shirt KBOO has ever designed.
And, you know, again, I just got to stress that people have stopped me on the street. People have talked to me. We've had potlucks about this very subject. If you think that it is important to discuss rape culture, if you think it's important to discuss violence against women, if you think it's important to still consider yourself to be a feminist, if you are coming into this consciousness now, then please contribute a little of your money to help keep this program and KBOO in general on the air. 877-500-5266.
Up the revolution.
Indeedly do. And we'll be back next week with Bob Jensen, who has a new book coming out. He's a professor of journalism at Texas University, and we'll be delighted to speak with him again. It's been a couple years since we've had Bob on, and I look forward to that conversation. Meanwhile, stay tuned to Saving Main Street from Wall Street, a three-hour special brought to you by your community radio station, KBOO.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, we are starting our special, Saving Main Street from Wall Street. How do we create an economy where everybody wins? It's a three-hour special with guests. Our first guest is Neil Barofsky, author of Bailout, How Washington Abandoned Main Street While Risking Wall Street. And Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher is the interviewer, and we are going to go to that special now.
We are so lucky to have with us by phone from New York City, where he is currently a senior fellow at New York City School of Law, Neil Barofsky, the former Inspector General in charge of oversight for TARP from 2008 to 2011. His fabulous New York Times bestselling book, Bailout, an insider's account of how Washington abandoned Main Street while rescuing Wall Street, is now out in paperback and updated with events that have happened since its release. Welcome to KBOO, and thanks so much for your book and your time to help us understand this really important topic and issue.
Oh, thank you for having me and for that kind introduction.
I'm sure that you're probably tired of explaining how you came to the position of Inspector General of Oversight for TARP and your kind of nonpartisan judicial background. But it's the reason that the book's so powerful and insightful, and it's just such a human and personal look at this very chewy subject. Prior to your appointment, you were a federal prosecutor.
Yeah, I was an assistant U.S. attorney here in Manhattan, lower Manhattan, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, the job I had always wanted, and I had been serving for about 8 years. And during that time, I got to do a bunch of different